When trying to determine the possible solutions to treat vexing diseases, it's critical to have an understanding of the underlying mechanisms or pathophysiology of the disease process. This study can range from the visual inspection of damaged organs to the molecular and cellular level. Scientists from the Salk Institute for Biological Sciences and the Scripps Research Institute reported in the August 10th issue of the journal Science progress in understanding how aging contributes to the development of Alzheimer's disease. The story in itself is fascinating and paints a wonderful picture of how basic science in an area that would seem completely unrelated to human neurodegenerative disease has made an important contribution to the understanding of the cause of Alzheimer's disease. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Andrew Dillon, Pioneer Developmental Chair and Assistant Professor at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, Molecular and Cell Biology Laboratory. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
To date, what is the evidence-based understanding of how people develop Alzheimer's disease? What is the model that people have in mind right now?
Well, there's two models for Alzheimer's. One is the familial form, which is the more rare cases of Alzheimer's, and that's usually hitting people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. But then there's the sporadic cases that hits a large proportion of people in their 80s, and that's primarily where the research that we were studying started out. We were really interested in what was the connection. Why was there this age-related component to the onset of this disease?
Can you describe what led to your recent publication? What was the basic science that preceded this particular study?
So the basic it was a very simple hypothesis is we wanted to know whether or not there was an active process in young cells that kept them more youthful and able to deal with the toxic effects of the Alzheimer's protein A-beta, or was it just a matter of time of accumulating this toxic protein that actually led to the damage? And to address that question, we had to have two things. One, we had to have a model in which we could study protein toxicity. We had to have an organism that could express the human A-beta peptide. And then we had to have a way to manipulate the aging process. And so over the last 10 to 15 years, there's been a large body of work looking at different model organisms. And these are organisms ranging from yeast to worms to flies to mice. And you can genetically manipulate these organisms to change their lifespan by changing the insulin IGF-1 signaling pathway. And so we combine those two things by combining expression of the toxic human A-beta peptide that is thought to be the causative agent for a human Alzheimer's disease, and we put it into a C. elegans model in which we could, C. elegans is the worm that we work on, that we could change the insulin IGF-1 signaling pathway. So we simply asked, if we made the animals live twice as long, do they get, quote-unquote, Alzheimer's disease the same rate as animals are going to live a normal lifespan? And what we found is that they didn't. They were protected much, much later in life. And this really suggested that there was something actively protecting the organism from the toxic effects of A-beta production. And so that was the first discovery in this paper, and there's three or four others that barreled out of this once we got moving on the research.
So, in effect, by altering the gene, a particular gene within the worm, from what my understanding was, is that the worm, as it aged, had deposition of the beta amyloid proteins that essentially slowed its ability to move. It deposited in the muscle or the parts of the worm that allowed it to move, and as it aged, it got stiffer and more difficult to do what it needed to do. And then when you altered the gene, you found that my understanding is there wasn't as much deposition of the beta amyloid protein in, because there were other proteins, when you change the genetic structure, that actually clean this up.
That's exactly right. And that's where we got more into the mechanism from this initial discovery, is we had assumed that the large protein aggregates, or the plaques, would be the toxic avenger in this entire process. So in the worm model, in which they were fine early in life, but then late in life they became the toxicity, we assume that there would be large aggregates that correlated with that, much like you see in the aging human brain of an Alzheimer's patient. But what we found is that when we altered the aging process and protected these animals, we found the exact opposite. We didn't find high molecular weight aggregates. In fact, we could completely uncouple that. So we found animals that were extremely protected, but they didn't have, they had hardly any, When we made the animals live much longer, we actually found that they had more high molecular weight aggregates than their normal control animals, but they weren't succumbing to toxicity. So then, together with Jeff Kelly's group at Scripps, we actively started asking, what was the toxic species? It wasn't these high molecular weight aggregates that were causing it. What was it? And so his group developed some really innovative technology to detect small molecular weight aggregates. And what we found is that there was this very small trimeric form of A-beta that was correlating with toxicity. And furthermore, we went after this biochemically to figure out what was the small toxic species, what was recognizing it. And we found two different pathways. We found one pathway that wants to actively disaggregate it and degrade it. And then another pathway, if that's not working, sees it and actively aggregates and makes it bigger so it's no longer a toxic species. And we think that it's these two activities that actually go down with age and gives rise possibly to the sporadic forms of Alzheimer's that we see much later in life in the human population.
So in other words, you have there's one protein that will, as you mentioned, sort of group everything together to make it easier to remove, and another one that actually removes it all, removes the plaque and gets rid of it. And as you get older, those particular functions wane, and as a result, you get these buildups, and even you get the smaller clumps or aggregates together, which actually cause more of the damage.
Yeah, that's our hypothesis now, is that whatever this small structured species is that we found in our worms, it's also been found now, Karen Shalash has found something similar in mice for early cognition, and Dennis Elko at Harvard has also found a similar thing looking at it in vitro studies. And we see the same thing in our worm model, this small trimeric form that may be the early event that's giving rise to toxicity. And so with age, somehow the cells are able, with early age, able to detect this and get rid of it. They either disaggregate it and degrade it, or if things get really bad, they will aggregate it into a much larger structure, into a plaque-like structure that may actually be protective in the end. And we think that it's analogous to sort of a janitorial cleanup crew, that every day, you know, you have these proteins coming in and cleaning up the office. But as time goes on, one or two workers doesn't show up, a little bit of trash starts to build up, and then over time you just have more and more trash building up, and you can't get rid of it, and you can't actually do your work. And so that's what we think is possibly going on in this scenario.
What are the future avenues for treatment based on this research? Now that you've identified the gene and also the proteins that are responsible for potentially mitigating or minimizing the effect of Alzheimer's disease or the beta amyloid protein buildup in the brain, what is your next step in your research? What would you like to do and what would you like to see happen?
That's a great question. I think that we're validating all of our Fielgen's work in a mouse model right now to see if this translates into a mammalian model. And so far, it looks very encouraging. That's one aspect of research that we're doing. The other aspect is, now that we know what these proteins are that can either disaggregate the toxic species or aggregate the toxic species and make it protective, we'd really like to find small molecules, i.e. drugs, that actually act on those proteins and make them more active later in life. Because our hypothesis is that these proteins are functioning very well in early life, but it's late in life that they start to malfunction, not work as well. So we can figure out a small molecule that could upregulate their activity, make them more active late in life, and give it late in life, and possibly this could be an avenue of research to actually prevent the onset of Alzheimer's disease late in life. That's something that Jeff Kelly at Scripps are actively pursuing, is combining all of the biochemical and in vitro assays that his group has developed with the genetic assays that we've developed, and look for small molecules or drugs that can actively go after these pathways that we discovered.
Well, Dr. Dillon, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to discuss this. Literally is great science. I mean, this, you look at this and it's elegant, it gets to the point, and really paints a good picture of understanding of some of the mechanisms behind Alzheimer's disease. And it's also, as I mentioned at the beginning, a very good reminder to people why it's important that basic science is done, that you can't pick and choose different areas because you think one may be a little strange and one isn't. You never know what you're going to find with what you look at.
That's a great way to summarize it. Thank you very much.
All the best and good luck.
Okay.
Bye-bye now. Dr. Andrew Dillon is Pioneer Developmental Chair and Assistant Professor at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in the Molecular and Cell Biology Laboratory in San Diego, California. Coming up, Dr. Andrew Pipe and some of the new ways and what's coming down the pipe, no pun intended, of new medications to treat people to help them stop smoking. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call.